Chapter 12. At the opera house, Rick Deckard and Phil Resch were informed that the rehearsal had ended, and Miss Luft had left. "Did she say where she intended to go?" Phil Resch asked the stagehand, showing his police identification.
"Over to the museum."
The stagehand studied the ID card.
"She said she wanted to take in the exhibit of Edvard Munch that's there now. It ends tomorrow."
And Luba Luft, Rick thought to himself, ends today. As the two of them walked down the sidewalk to the museum, Phil Resch said,
"What odds will you give?"
"She's flown. We won't find her at the museum."
"Maybe," Rick said. They arrived at the museum building, noted on which floor the Munch exhibit could be found, and ascended. Shortly, they wandered amid paintings and woodcuts. Many people had turned out for the exhibit, including a grammar school class. The shrill voice of the teacher penetrated all the rooms comprising the exhibit, and Rick thought, "That's what you'd expect an Andy to sound and look like, instead of like Rachel Rosen and Luba Luft, and the man beside him, or rather, the thing beside him.
Did you ever hear of an Andy having a pet of any sort?" Phil Resch asked him.
For some obscure reason, he felt the need to be brutally honest. Perhaps he had already begun preparing himself for what lay ahead. "In two cases that I know of, Andy's owned and cared for animals. But it's rare. From what I've been able to learn, it generally fails. The Andy is unable to keep the animal alive. Animals require an environment of warmth to flourish, except for reptiles and insects."
"Would a squirrel need that?
An atmosphere of love?
Because Buffy is doing fine, as sleek as an otter. I groom and comb him every other day."
At an oil painting, Phil Resch halted, gazed intently. The painting showed a hairless, oppressed creature with a head like an inverted pear, its hands clapped in horror to its ears, its mouth open in a vast, soundless scream. Twisted ripples of the creature's torment, echoes of its cry, flooded out into the air surrounding it. The man or woman, whichever it was, had become contained by its own howl. It had covered its ears against its own sound. The creature stood on a bridge, and no one else was present. The creature screamed in isolation, cut off by, or despite, its outcry. "He did a woodcut of this," Rick said, reading the card tacked below the painting.
"I think," Phil Resch said, "that this is how an Andy must feel."
He traced in the air the convolutions visible in the picture of the creature's cry.
"I don't feel like that.
So maybe I'm not an..." He broke off as several persons strolled up to inspect the picture.
"There's Luba Luft."
Rick pointed and Phil Resch halted his somber introspection and defense. The two of them walked at a measured pace toward her, taking their time as if nothing confronted them. As always, it was vital to preserve the atmosphere of the commonplace. Other humans, having no knowledge of the presence of androids among them, had to be protected at all costs, even that of losing the quarry. Holding a printed catalog, Luba Luft, wearing shiny tapered pants and an illuminated gold vest-like top, stood absorbed in the picture before her. A drawing of a young girl, hands clasped together, seated on the edge of a bed, an expression of bewildered wonder and new, groping awe imprinted on the face.
Want me to buy it for you? Rick said to Luba Luft. He stood beside her, holding laxly onto her upper arm, informing her by his loose grip that he knew he had possession of her. He did not have to strain in an effort to detain her. On the other side of her, Phil Resch put his hand on her shoulder, and Rick saw the bulge of the laser tube. Phil Resch did not intend to take chances, not after the near miss with Inspector Garland.
It's not for sale.
Luba Luft glanced at him idly, then violently as she recognized him. Her eyes faded and the color dimmed from her face, leaving it cadaverous, as if already starting to decay. As if life had, in an instant, retreated to some point far inside her, leaving the body to its automatic ruin.
I thought they arrested you. Do you mean they let you go?
Miss Luft, he said. This is Mr. Resch. Phil Resch, this is the quite well-known opera singer Luba Luft. To Luba, he said, the harness bull that arrested me is an android. So was his superior. Do you know? Did you know? An Inspector Garland? He told me that you all came here in one ship as a group. The police department which you called, Phil Resch said to her, operating out of a building on Mission is the organizing agency by which it would appear your group keeps in touch. They even feel confident enough to hire a human bounty hunter. Evidently,
you,
Luba Luft said, you're not human.
No more than I am. You're an android, too.
An interval of silence passed, and then Phil Resch said in a low but controlled voice,
Well, we'll deal with that at the proper time.
To Rick, he said, Let's take her to my car. One of them on each side of her, they prodded her in the direction of the museum elevator. Luba Luft did not come willingly, but on the other hand, she did not actively resist. Seemingly, she had become resigned. Rick had seen that before in androids, in crucial situations. The artificial life force animating them seemed to fail if pressed too far. At least in some of them. But not all. And it could flare up again furiously. Androids, however, had, as he knew, an innate desire to remain inconspicuous. In the museum, with so many people roaming around, Luba Luft would tend to do nothing. The real encounter, for her probably the final one, would take place in the car, where no one else could see. Alone, with appalling abruptness, she could shed her inhibitions. He prepared himself and did not think about Phil Resch. As Resch had said, it would be dealt with at a proper time. At the end of the corridor near the elevators, a little store-like affair had been set up. It sold prints and art books, and Luba halted there, tarrying.
Listen, she said to Rick.
Some of the color had returned to her face. Once more, she looked, at least briefly, alive.
Buy me a reproduction of that picture I was looking at when you found me. The one of the girl sitting on the bed.
After a pause, Rick said to the clerk, a heavy-jowled, middle-aged woman with netted gray hair, Do you have a print of Munch's puberty?
Only in this book of his collected work,
the clerk said, lifting down a handsome, glossy volume.
$25.
I'll take it. He reached for his wallet. Phil Resch said, My departmental budget could never in a million years be stretched. My own money, Rick said. He handed the woman the bills and Luba the book. "Now let's get started down," he said to her and Phil Resch.
"It's very nice of you,"
Luba said as they entered the elevator.
"There's something very strange and touching about humans. An android would never have done that."
She glanced icily at Phil Resch. It wouldn't have occurred to him. As he said, never in a million years. She continued to gaze at Resch, now with manifold hostility and aversion.
"I really don't like androids. Ever since I got here from Mars, my life has consisted of imitating the human, doing what she would do, acting as if I had the thoughts and impulses a human would have. Imitating, as far as I'm concerned, a superior life form."
To Phil Resch, she said,
"Isn't that how it's been with you, Resch? Trying to be?"
"I can't take this." Phil Resch dug into his coat, groped. "No," Rick said. He grabbed at Phil Resch's hand. Resch retreated, eluding him. "The Benelli test," Rick said. "It's admitted it's an android," Phil Resch said. "We don't have to wait." "But to retire it," Rick said, "because it's needling you. Give me that." He struggled to pry the laser tube away from Phil Resch. The tube remained in Phil Resch's possession. Resch circled back within the cramped elevator, evading him, his attention on Luba Luft only.
"Okay," Rick said.
"Retire it. Kill it now. Show it that it's right." He saw then that Resch meant to. "Wait!" Phil Resch fired, and at the same instant Luba Luft, in a spasm of frantic, hunted fear, twisted and spun away, dropping as she did so. The beam missed its mark, but as Resch lowered it, burrowed a narrow hole silently into her stomach. She began to scream. She lay crouched against the wall of the elevator, screaming. Like the picture, Rick thought to himself, and with his own laser tube, killed her. Luba Luft's body fell forward, face down in a heap. It did not even tremble. With his laser tube, Rick systematically burned into blurred ash the book of pictures which he had just a few minutes ago bought Luba. He did the job thoroughly, saying nothing. Phil Resch watched without understanding, his face showing his perplexity.
"You could have kept the book yourself," Resch said when it had been done. "That cost you..."
"Do you think androids have souls?" Rick interrupted. Cocking his head on one side, Phil Resch gazed at him in even greater puzzlement. "I could afford the book," Rick said. "I've made $3,000 so far today, and I'm not even half through."
"You're claiming Garland?" Phil Resch asked.
"But I killed him, not you. You just lay there. And Luba, too. I got her." "You can't collect," Rick said. "Not from your own department and not from ours. When we get to your car, I'll administer the Benelli test or the Voight-Kampff to you, and then we'll see. Even though you're not on my list." His hands shaking, he opened his briefcase, rummaged among the crumpled onion skin carbons.
"No. You're not here.
So legally, I can't claim you. To make anything, I'll have to claim Luba Luft and Garland."
"You're sure I'm an android?"
"Is that really what Garland said?"
"That's what Garland said."
"Maybe he was lying," Phil Resch said. "To split us apart, as we are now. We're nuts letting them split us. You were absolutely right about Luba Luft. I shouldn't have let her get my goat like that. I must be overly sensitive. That would be natural for a bounty hunter, I suppose. You're probably the same way. But look, we would have had to retire Luba Luft anyhow, half an hour from now. Only one half hour more. She wouldn't even have had time to look through that book you got her. And I still think you shouldn't have destroyed it. That's a waste. I can't follow your reasoning. It isn't rational, that's why. Rick said, I'm getting out of this business. And go into what? Anything. Insurance underwriting, like Garland was supposed to be doing. Or I'll emigrate. Yes. He nodded. I'll go to Mars. But someone has to do this, Phil Resch pointed out. They can use androids. Much better if Andy's doing. I can't anymore. I've had enough. She was a wonderful singer. The planet could have used her. This is insane. This is necessary. Remember, they killed humans in order to get away. And if I hadn't gotten you out of the Mission police station, they would have killed you. That's what Garland wanted me for. That's why he had me come down to his office. Didn't Polakoff almost kill you? Didn't Luba Luft almost? We're acting defensively. They're here on our planet. They're murderous, illegal aliens masquerading as... As police, Rick said. As bounty hunters. Okay. Give me the Benelli test. Maybe Garland lied. I think he did. False memories just aren't that good. What about my squirrel? Yes, your squirrel. I forgot about your squirrel. If I'm an Andy, Phil Resch said, and you kill me, you can have my squirrel. Here, I'll write it out, willing it to you. Andes can't will anything. They can't possess anything to will. Then just take it, Phil Resch said. Maybe so, Rick said. The elevator had reached the first floor now. Its doors opened. You stay with Luba. I'll get a patrol car here to take her to the Hall of Justice for her bone marrow test. He saw a phone booth, entered it, dropped in a coin, and, his fingers shaking, dialed. Meanwhile, a group of people who had been waiting for the elevator gathered around Phil Resch and the body of Luba Luft. She was really a superb singer, he said to himself as he hung up the receiver, his call completed. I don't get it. How can a talent like that be a liability to our society? But it wasn't the talent, he told himself. It was she herself, as Phil Resch is, he thought. He's a menace in exactly the same way, for the same reasons. So I can't quit now. Emerging from the phone booth, he pushed his way among the people, back to Resch and the prone figure of the android girl. Someone had put a coat over her, not Resch's. Going up to Phil Resch, who stood off to one side, vigorously smoking a small gray cigar, he said to him, I hope to God you do test out as an android. You really hate me, Phil Resch said, marveling. All of a sudden. You didn't hate me back on Mission Street. Not while I was saving your life. I see a pattern.
the way you killed Garland, and then the way you killed Luba. You don't kill the way I do. You don't try to...
Hell, he said. I know what it is.
You like to kill. All you need is a pretext. If you had a pretext, you'd kill me. That's why you picked up on the possibility of Garland being an android. It made him available for being killed. I wonder what you're going to do when you fail to pass the Benelli test. Will you kill yourself? Sometimes androids do that. But the situation was rare.
Yes. I'll take care of it, Phil Resch said. You won't have to do anything, besides administering the test.
A patrol car arrived. Two policemen hopped out, strode up, saw the crowd of people, and at once cleared themselves a passage through. One of them recognized Rick and nodded. So we can go now, Rick realized. Our business here is concluded. Finally. As he and Resch walked back down the street to the opera house, on whose roof their hover car lay parked, Resch said, I'll give you my laser tube now, so you won't have to worry about my reaction to the test. In terms of your own personal safety. He held out the tube, and Rick accepted it. How will you kill yourself without it? Rick asked. If you fail the test.
I'll hold my breath.
Christ's sake, Rick said. It can't be done. There's no automatic cut-in of the vagus nerve, Phil Resch said, in an android, as there is in a human. Weren't you taught that when they trained you? I got taught that years ago. But to die that way, Rick protested. There's no pain. What's the matter with it? He gestured, unable to find the right words. I don't really think I'm going to have to, Phil Resch said. Together they ascended to the roof of the War Memorial Opera House and Phil Resch's parked hover car. Sliding behind the wheel and closing his door, Phil Resch said, I would prefer it if you used the Benelli test. I can't. I don't know how to score it. I would have to rely on you for an interpretation of the readings, he realized. And that's out of the question.
You'll tell me the truth, won't you? Phil Resch asked.
If I'm an android, you'll tell me.
Sure.
Because I really want to know. I have to know.
Phil Resch relit his cigar, shifted about on the bucket seat of the car, trying to make himself comfortable. Evidently, he could not.
Did you really like that Munk picture that Luba Luft was looking at? He asked.
I didn't care for it. Realism in art doesn't interest me. I like Picasso and... Puberty dates from 1894, Rick said shortly. Nothing but realism existed then. You have to take that into account.
But that other one, of the man holding his ears and yelling, that wasn't representational.
Opening his briefcase, Rick fished out his test gear.
Elaborate, Phil Resch observed, watching. How many questions do you have to ask before you can make a determination?
Six or seven. He handed the adhesive pad to Phil Resch. Attach that to your cheek, firmly. And this light, he aimed it. This stays focused on your eye. Don't move. Keep your eyeball as steady as you can.
Reflex fluctuations, Phil Resch said acutely.
But not to the physical stimulus.
You're not measuring dilation, for instance. It'll be to the verbal questions. What we call a flinch reaction.
Rick said, "Do you think you can control it?"
"Not really. Eventually, maybe. But not the initial amplitude. That's outside conscious control. If it weren't..."
He broke off.
"Go ahead. I'm tense. Excuse me if I talk too much."
"Talk all you want," Rick said. "Talk all the way to the tomb," he said to himself, "if you feel like it." It didn't matter to him.
"If I test out Android," Phil Resch prattled, "you'll undergo renewed faith in the human race. But since it's not going to work out that way, I suggest you begin framing an ideology which will account for..."
"Here's the first question," Rick said. The gear had now been set up and the needles of the two dials quivered. "Reaction time is a factor, so answer as rapidly as you can." From memory, he selected an initial question. The test had begun. Afterward, Rick sat in silence for a time. Then he began gathering his gear together, stuffing it back in the briefcase.
"I can tell by your face," Phil Resch said.
He exhaled in absolute, weightless, almost convulsive relief.
"Okay. You can give me my gun back."
He reached out, his palm up, waiting. "Evidently you were right," Rick said, "about Garland's motives. Wanting to split us up. What you said." He felt both psychologically and physically weary.
"Do you have your ideology framed?" Phil Resch asked. "That would explain me as part of the human race?"
Rick said, "There is a defect in your empathic role-taking ability, one which we don't test for. Your feelings toward androids."
"Of course we don't test for that."
"Maybe we should." He had never thought of it before, had never felt any empathy on his own part toward the androids he killed. Always he had assumed that throughout his psyche he experienced the android as a clever machine, as in his conscious view. And yet, in contrast to Phil Resch, a difference had manifested itself. And he felt instinctively that he was right. Empathy toward an artificial construct? He asked himself. Something that only pretends to be alive? But Luba Luft had seemed genuinely alive. It had not worn the aspect of a simulation.
"You realize," Phil Resch said quietly, "what this would do? If we included androids in our range of empathic identification as we do animals,
we couldn't protect ourselves."
"Absolutely. These Nexus 6 types, they'd roll all over us and mash us flat. You and I, all the bounty hunters, we stand between the Nexus 6 and mankind, a barrier which keeps the two distinct. Furthermore..."
He ceased, noticing that Rick was once again hauling out his test gear.
"I thought the test was over."
"I want to ask myself a question," Rick said. "And I want you to tell me what the needles register. Just give me the calibration. I can compute it." He plastered the adhesive disc against his cheek, arranged the beam of light until it fed directly into his eye. "Are you ready? Watch the dials. We'll exclude time lapse in this. I just want magnitude."
"Sure, Rick."
Phil Resch said obligingly. Aloud, Rick said, I'm going down an elevator with an android I've captured. And suddenly someone kills it without warning.
No particular response, Phil Resch said. What did the needles hit?
The left one 2.8, the right one 3.3.
Rick said, a female android.
Now they're up to 4.0 and 6, respectively.
That's high enough, Rick said.
He removed the wired adhesive disc from his cheek and shut off the beam of light.
That's an emphatically empathic response, he said. About what a human subject shows for most questions. Except for the extreme ones, such as those dealing with human pelts used decoratively. The truly pathological ones.
Meaning?
Rick said, I'm capable of feeling empathy for at least specific, certain androids. Not for all of them, but one or two. For Luba Luft, as an example, he said to himself. So I was wrong. There's nothing unnatural or unhuman about Phil Resch's reactions.
It's me.
I wonder, he wondered, if any human has ever felt this way before about an android. Of course, he reflected, this may never come up again in my work. It could be an anomaly, something, for instance, to do with my feelings for the magic flute. And for Luba's voice, in fact, her career as a whole. Certainly. This had never come up before, or at least not that he had been aware of. Not, for example, with Polakoff, nor with Garland. And, he realized, if Phil Resch had proved out Android, I could have killed him without feeling anything. Anyhow, after Luba's death. So much for the distinction between authentic living humans and humanoid constructs. In that elevator at the museum, he said to himself, I rode down with two creatures, one human, the other android. And my feelings were the reverse of those intended, of those I'm accustomed to feel, am required to feel.
You're in a spot, Deckard, Phil Resch said.
It seemed to amuse him. Rick said, What should I do?
It's sex, Phil Resch said.
Sex?
Because it was physically attractive. Hasn't that ever happened to you before?
Phil Resch laughed.
We were taught that it constitutes a prime problem in bounty hunting. Don't you know, Deckard, that in the colonies they have android mistresses?
It's illegal, Rick said, knowing the law about that.
Sure, it's illegal. But most variations in sex are illegal. But people do it anyhow.
What about not sex, but love?
Love is another name for sex.
Like love of country, Rick said. Love of music.
If it's love toward a woman or an android imitation, it's sex.
Wake up and face yourself, Deckard. You wanted to go to bed with a female type of android. Nothing more, nothing less.
I felt that way on one occasion, when I had just started bounty hunting.
Don't let it get you down. You'll heal. What's happened is that you've got your order reversed. Don't kill her, or be present when she's killed and then feel physically attracted. Do it the other way.
Rick stared at him.
Go to bed with her first.
And then kill her, Phil Rash said succinctly. His grainy, hardened smile remained.
You're a good bounty hunter, Rick realized. Your attitude proves it.
But am I?
Suddenly, for the first time in his life, he had begun to wonder.